are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock, your host, with you once again. A new week talking 49ers here, bringing it to you daily on Locked On 49ers. It's a mailbag show to kick off the week. I've got all kinds of great questions, and I posed a question to the listeners. Last week, I asked for some underrated 49ers, some underrated players around the league. We flipped it this week. I wanted to hear about some a little negativity to start the week. Why not? I wanted to hear some overrated players around the league, and I think I actually got more responses this week, which tells you about the human nature of things. And so we'll get into some players that my listeners feel are a little bit overrated, as well as some other questions breaking down the San Francisco 49ers as we do here on the program. Don't forget to subscribe to this show. You can find us on the new Himalaya podcast app. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere that you can find podcasts. You can find us and all the shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. That's where most of the mailbag questions are coming from today. You can email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com, and all of the shows, they're streaming at LockedOn49ers.com. You can also find where to subscribe there on the website, as well as other articles, including one, and actually it looks like it might be a two-parter on deck from Chris Wilson, breaking down Chris Kucerik's addition to the 49ers and the wide nine and what that might look like. So I'm excited myself to read that one, and I also will have Chris on the podcast breaking that down. But today we're hitting the mailbag, so let's go ahead and get that started. We've got some people who are voting for their most overrated players around the league. Tony says Dak Prescott for the NFL, and I want to say Nick Mullins might be the most overrated member of the 49ers. Not saying Nick can't play ball, I just think many people think he's better than he actually is, hence overrated. You know, Tony, I've seen a lot of people even talking about how there might not be a difference between Nick Mullins and Jimmy Garoppolo. And I'm a Nick Mullins fan, and I think Nick Mullins has done everything he needs to do to win the number two job, but definitely pumping the brakes on thinking Nick Mullins is better than Jimmy Garoppolo, and we'll see how Jimmy G does this year, having his second offseason in Kyle Shanahan's system. And I think that'll be hugely beneficial. Obviously, a healthy knee will be the biggest factor for Jimmy Garoppolo. But as far as Nick Mullins, I think he's rated about properly from most people. Some people get a little bit overzealous when they like a guy and they want to prop him up even higher than how they feel about it, just because they want to let it known how they feel about a player. And so I kind of follow where you're going with that, Nick Mullins. And Dak Prescott, yeah, you know what? Dak has not taken that next step as a quarterback. He came out on fire as a rookie, and you thought, oh man, this might be the next great quarterback in the NFL playing for the Cowboys, and he just kind of stayed. He's kind of been that guy, which has been pretty good, but it's you know, it's weird. It's just a weird career arc and a development arc for Dak Prescott. Most quarterbacks start out pretty darn bad as a rookie, and the good ones get better and better and better and into their 30s, continually getting better. And Dak Prescott has just been the guy he was as a rookie, and it's kind of still been that same guy. Solomon says, based on where he was drafted, Ndamukong Suh is overrated. Never really lived up to his hype. For the 49ers, I think fans are overrating Marcel Harris. He seemed to be better than Tart last year only because he was more aggressive, but I only think that was due to Tart's injury. I still don't know even how to feel about Marcel Harris or Tart, because They haven't been on the field enough, and I think both of them are pretty good, and I think Tart has the potential to be really good, but with all the injuries mounting up, you know, is that going to take its toll on him? And I would like to be able to see him for an extended period of time and not getting hurt, but I think it is nice that the 49ers have some depth now, and if Tart gets hurt, I think I'm okay with Marcel Harris getting in there and starting some games, and potentially maybe Marcel Harris is even better. I don't know. But I can't say that he's overrated right now, just because I don't know if he even should be rated, because I think it's a sort of an incomplete grade is what Marcel Harris should have, as well as some other players on that 49ers defense that really need to step up here for the 49ers to have a really, truly great season. That's that secondary where there's some question marks. On that note, Matt says for the 49ers, either Jaquiski Tartt or Weston Richburg are the most overrated, and for the NFL, it's Derek Carr. Richburg, I can see where that comes from because of his contract. He was paid to be one of the better centers in the league last year, wasn't able to show it in his first year as a 49er. I still think, I mean, I liked Weston Richburg from coming out of Colorado State in college. I thought he was a really good center. I think he fits exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants to do on offense. I think he fits the scheme really well. Kyle Shanahan went out to get him because of those very reasons, but Richburg got hurt early in the season and played through it. And so I don't think we saw how good Richburg is last year. And so I think a healthy Richburg this year, we'll see who he is and we'll see why Kyle Shanahan likes him for his offense. He might not be the best center in the league, but I think he's going to be fine. Even if he's making a couple bucks too much, he's a good center. And I think we'll see that in 2019. So Matt, I would hold off on Richburg, make that assessment again after this year. And then, you know, maybe you might be right if he's getting all this cash and is really not playing all that well, especially when healthy. Derek Carr, big year for him. Is he a franchise quarterback? Is he the Raiders guy for the future? I don't know. I like Derek Carr. I want to like Derek Carr. But yeah, the results just haven't quite been there yet for him. Let's go to Butterman. 49ers, not super easy since we don't get too much love on the national level. I think I'll have to say Tart. So, dude, people are hating on a Tart. And Ward has had a few of them, too. He says mainly, not for doing or proving much, he hasn't caught the same flack as others like Ward, et cetera. Yeah, that's true. And there is a lot of votes for Ward on here. But Halverson says Ward can play when he's not hurt. But when is that? And yeah, that's rough. And I understand why the coaching staff might like Jimmy Ward. But unfortunately, his career is just, it's never completely gotten off the ground because he can't get on the field. CeeLo says Alec Ogletree is the most overrated with his cap hit due to be $11+ million the next three seasons. I will agree with that one. I will even go as far as to say if anybody thinks Alec Ogletree is even like kind of good, then he's overrated. Like, I wouldn't want Alec Ogletree on the field for me. He's just not that good of a football player, and he's absolutely not lived up to his billing. And I don't know why that is. He's just played bad. All the metrics hate Alec Ogletree. He just has never put it all together for how much athleticism and natural ability he has. Solomon says on the 49ers, Jimmy G or McKinnon, because they've been hurt and haven't performed enough. And for the NFL, Le'Veon Bell, not sure if he's worth that money. I can get down with that. Le'Veon Bell, any running back. I mean, you don't pay a running back that much money. It's not that important. You can have a replacement level solid running back, or you can have the best running back in the league, and it's not going to affect the W's and the L's as much as almost any other position in the NFL if you said the same thing about it and you had a star player there versus just a league average player. Let's go to Drew. He says, what is the wisdom in counting on Jimmy Ward to start? He could play well, then while watching film break a bone and be out again, him playing stunts, development of Colbert and Moore, and possibly DJ Reed. And then he goes on to say, and David Johnson is totally overrated. Multiple votes for David Johnson as well. Yeah, that was a big head scratcher this offseason. Counting on Ward to be the starter, you just can't do it. It was similar to Jason Verrett. You bring a guy in because he's talented, and whatever you get is a bonus. But to pencil in February and pre-draft and say, okay, we have our starter, his name is Jimmy Ward, that's just not smart. You just can't do that. You can't rely on Jimmy Ward at this point, even though he's a good player. And I wish he could stay on this field all season and show everybody what he has, but that's just, it's not in the cards for him. But I don't know if he will stunt the development of Colbert and Moore. And I think it's because he won't be on the field enough to do so. And once Jimmy Ward gets hurt, and he's already hurt, if Colbert and or Moore have great training camps, then it's their job. I don't see how you can go back to Ward at that point because you need continuity back there. And if you have this younger player who is under contract for more than 1 year, who's looking like he's a starting caliber player, you got to stick with him. So I fully expect, actually, I'm thinking more and more about Moore playing free safety and thinking, man, maybe that's the right move and that's where he should stick. And I'm interested to see what he can do with all that athleticism out there playing in this. And from reports from minicamp and OTAs that he was flashing and he was showing some of that range that you need to play in the cover three. And Colbert can do some of those things too. So I'm okay with a flat-out battle between Ward, Colbert, and Moore. But counting on Jimmy Ward, I'm with you. There's no wisdom. You just can't do it. And so if there's like basically if it's a tie, then Ward has to be your backup just because you can't count on him and you can't count on that continuity of him being out there for you every week. We got to take a quick break here, but the free safety position, I'll tie it up with this, is one of the weirdest positions on the 49ers because there's a lot of people who could play free safety, and there's a lot of people who might even play free safety very well for the 49ers and be a stud out there. But there's so many question marks. You don't know who that is. You don't have any consistency. The players who have played out there have gotten hurt. And so whether it's Ward or Colbert or Moore or even Tart, I can see a situation where they're running out of starting group that has Tart playing free safety and Marcel Harris playing strong safety if there's a bunch of injuries back there. So they have a lot of guys who could play free safety. Who's going to win that job? Who's going to be the guy? Maybe having enough bodies will be the deciding factor in them actually finding somebody. You know, they're going to just throw as many guys at the wall and see who sticks. And maybe that will be the ticket there. Okay, let's step aside momentarily for a word from our sponsors and then back to the Locked On 49ers mailbag. Okay, here we go with the saltiness. And this is kind of what I expected when I threw out the question of who's the most overrated players in the NFL. I thought I would see a lot of this specific answer and especially a lot of Seahawks. I think there's not maybe quite as much animosity and they don't have as many names on that Seahawks roster as they once did. But Scott says Russell Wilson. And I definitely disagree with Russell Wilson being overrated. In fact, I might even lean toward Russell Wilson being somewhat underrated. But I do love the idea of, that's just classic. I love that with 49ers fans. And I actually expected to see more of Russell Wilson. I saw his name here a couple of times. I'll put this question out to my listeners. And I would love to hear from you at BD Peacock on Twitter or wherever you find me on social media. If you're the Seahawks and you're in charge of the Seahawks, would you rather keep, and you only could choose one, would you rather keep Russell Wilson or would you rather keep Pete Carroll? Because I think that's the only argument against Russell Wilson is like, the structure's in place. It's a well-coached team. And whoever they put in there, they'd be able to run the ball a little bit and they are a run-first offense and then their quarterback would be okay. I tend to think the other way around. I would take another coach and take my chances finding myself another young coach to coach that football team, maybe even their former defensive backs coach in Chris Richard, then take my chances with the offense under Russell Wilson. I just think Russell Wilson's a really good player, and he elevates everybody on that team. And without Russell Wilson, I mean, they're still a 10-win team. With all the losses they've had across the board, that team would fall apart without Russell Wilson. And I know it's annoying, and I know it's maybe a little bit of envy, maybe a little bit of saltiness, but Russell Wilson's a really good player, and I think he's absolutely the most important cog in that Seattle Seahawks franchise. But maybe I'm in the minority. I would love to hear from you guys. Hit me up on Twitter. Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll, if you had to choose only one. Nick on Twitter says, "Hey, Brian, love the show and your format. Most overrated 49er is Jimmy Ward by the front office." He prefaces that by who is overrating him. And yeah, the front office might have overrated Jimmy Ward's, not talent maybe, but ability to help the team and be on the field. And I totally get that. It's a big head scratcher for the 49ers offseason is leaning on Ward and expecting a full season out of him. Let's go to D-Book on Twitter, who might have had the best answer of this whole thing. First, he says, "On the 49ers, I won't bash my team, but in the NFL, David Johnson, he had one good year and consistently in the conversation for best running back. I don't see it anymore." And yeah, he did not have a good season last year. And I don't know if that a massive knee injury he had took its toll, but he was not efficient. He did not have, it was like 3.5 yards per carry last year for the Cardinals. And I know there's a bad coaching situation there. So we'll see if maybe his career is reinvigorated under Cliff Kingsbury there, and he can still catch the ball out of the backfield. So maybe that'll be the saving grace for David Johnson's career. But that could go in another direction, and his career could skew for what he's expected to be in the league and for the Cardinals specifically and for people's fantasy teams drafting him in the top five. But the best part of this is D-Book putting baldness cures on blast. He says, "And baldness cures, if they work, why are all these rich men still bald?" That is a great point. That is a fantastic point. I'm with you 100%. These baldness cures don't seem to be working all that well. At least for those dudes who might be follicly challenged, the bald look is in, and I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. I think you got to thank Michael Jordan for that. MJ really kept that going strong for all the bald dudes out there. I got to admit, though, I miss the cul-de-sac hair look. You go back and watch 80s movies and all these guys, they're distinguished with their cul-de-sac and it's growing, it's overgrowing on the side like some shrubbery. I kind of like that do. I wish there was more guys that had the guts to rock that. I'm into the cul-de-sac. Bring it back, man. Own it. And you know what? This is such a copycat society. And if you see someone bust out some move, a pro athlete especially, they have so much influence. You see a guy do something after he scores, whether it's a dance move or whatever, a hand signal, everybody's doing it 2 weeks later. Like everybody in the NFL, his colleagues, like other grown men are like, I like that thing that homeboy did. I'm going to do that too. Remember how played out the dab got? The people were doing that 2 years later after it was already old. And he was like, what are you guys doing? You got to come up with something else, man. But if a pro athlete, a high profile athlete, like if LeBron or Odell Beckham or like Tom Brady, if he keeps playing until he's 55 years old, he's going to start running out of hair at some point, right? And what if he just rocked that, like the big time comb over? That'd be amazing. But with LeBron, instead of doing whatever he has done to his hair, he's got something going on up there. I don't know if he's painting it on or what. He's had some serious work done to the top of his head to add some hair. If LeBron just said, you know what, I'm going to let it go, and it was growing out on the sides, and it was low on the top, and he had a little cul-de-sac going, and he just rocked it, and he was taking his team to the finals and winning rings like that, there'd be people everywhere with that look. Odell Beckham could do it. Odell Beckham could get a trend started instead of whatever that thing he's got going on that everybody has copied. Like everyone's doing that Odell Beckham thing, which is actually originally just a ripoff of like 1987 Anita Baker, if we're being honest. Google that one if you don't know. All right, let's move on. Let's check in with Brandon, who says, I need a go-to cocktail on the beach, currently in Hawaii and in need of a nice cocktail. And if only one player achieved a huge comeback year and as a result, Niners would become a top defense, which player would it be? Witherspoon, Colbert, or Sully? Those are two very good questions. Let's start with the football question first. And a comeback player or someone to take that big leap and really make a huge difference for the 49ers, I would say Witherspoon would be that guy. If Witherspoon all of a sudden became a lockdown corner on the side opposite from Richard Sherman, and Richard Sherman was able to gain a half step back from what his painful Achilles situation was last year, Solomon Thomas could help, but the 49ers should already have a very good defense, even if he's just the same guy he's been for the first couple of years of his career. So I'd say Witherspoon for sure, and because of that positional scarcity and positional value of a big-time cornerback, if he was to have some huge year and become a guy out there at corner, well, that would be massive for the 49ers defense. As far as go-to cocktails for the beach, so beach cocktails, and especially if you're in Hawaii, you're probably getting some tropical stuff, probably a lot of rum in those cocktails, probably a lot of Mai Tais. If you listen to the show, you know that I don't like the punch bowl sort of drinks. You know, I want it to be smaller, and I don't want it to be some massive sugary thing. Like I say, I understand you go out, have some drinks, hang out with your friends, and maybe you wake up with a hangover. It happens. But I don't want to wake up in the morning with a hangover and diabetes. That's the way I look at it. If I'm looking for a beach cocktail, I would do a classic daiquiri, which is almost like a rum margarita. So you're basically just having some light rum, fresh lime juice, a little simple syrup, easy cocktail. It's a short cocktail. It's tasty. And, you know, most people when they think daiquiri, they probably think of some like blended strawberry daiquiri. And that's probably not the worst thing compared to some of these other massive cocktails you might get that are tropical and have all kinds of sugar in them. But, and it kind of depends if they're making them fresh. If they're just throwing strawberries with a daiquiri, that's one thing. If you're throwing a bunch of whatever else, who knows, these pre-made cocktails, you never know what's going to be coming in something like that. But I would say a daiquiri, just a nice classic daiquiri, a Hemingway daiquiri if you want to get fancy. I think that's pretty much just a daiquiri with some maraschino in it. I think one awesome cocktail that I'll throw out there that would be a perfect beach cocktail, although it might be something that you can't really get or at least done well in Hawaii, is a cocktail invented in San Francisco, the Chartreuse Swizzle, which is not a rum drink. It's actually green chartreuse, velvet falernum. It's got pineapple juice and lime juice, and it's on top of shaved ice. So it's got the, you know, the shaved ice where it's like domed over the top of the glass. It's a really refreshing cocktail, a little bit of spice to it because of the chartreuse and the combination of that with the velvet falernum that has a little bit of spiciness to it. But it's refreshing. It's not a super strong cocktail. It'd be a great one for the beach if you could find somebody that could do that for you in Hawaii. So if you go to a bar and you see that green bottle of chartreuse on the wall, ask them to make you a chartreuse swizzle. That's a San Francisco original drink, and it's pretty tasty and refreshing and a great one for the beach. And you can never go wrong with a well-made, fresh-squeezed margarita. This podcast is brought to you in part by Hotels.com and Blue Chew. Some more people chiming in with overrated players around the league. Alan says Kirk Cousins. A vote for Jarvis Landry. A vote for Carson Wentz. A lot of quarterbacks showing up. Jared votes for Trey Flowers. And Alvin votes for Mitch Trubisky. And staying consistent, he says, I got to say, and hold your hats, everybody, for the 49ers. He says Jimmy G. Love this dude, but probably hasn't earned his hype quite yet. That being said, I will still have his picture printed and taped to my Christmas tree angel. Alvin, that's fair. I understand where you're going with that. And I know, and it's funny because Alvin's very real here. And I do want to read another comment from Alvin a little bit later. Maybe I'll finish the show with that. But Alvin is being real with himself because he's hoping. And he's got a picture of Jimmy Jesus in his home. And the hope is there that Jimmy G's great, but you're right. He's only started a handful of games in the NFL, and we still haven't seen maybe his best, but we still haven't seen really who he is, and we'll see where he settles in. And I think this will be the year that we get that answer. And you're right. Garoppolo has sky-high expectations despite not having a ton of NFL success. Zach says, I know he couldn't get the physical reps, but is it safe to assume we see the second-year bump most people taking Shanahan's system for Garoppolo just from the mental reps and the work he got to do with Mike Shanahan last year? Yes, Zach, absolutely 100%. I believe that the second offseason in Kyle Shanahan's system, he didn't get to have the reps. He didn't get to play all year, but he got to take some mental reps, and he got to do his work that he did with Mike Shanahan. And he's talked about how smart and how brilliant Mike Shanahan was. And the Shannies run the same offense. So that absolutely had to help him. Mentally, he has to be so much more prepared coming into this season than he was last year. And I think it was pretty obvious to have a pared down offense and show up and win five games in a row and then come back and sputter a little bit when you get all of that information and you have that playbook and you get it all thrown on you in your first offseason. I think you're almost like a rookie in that case. And now having his second year, I think he'll be so much more comfortable, and we'll see that physical ability and see him snapping off throws and that quick release that he has and being able to throw darts, especially over the intermediate parts of the field and down the seam and down the middle. It's going to be so fun. And I think it's going to be a perfect match with Shanahan's system. And now he'll mentally be there and ready to go. And I think that'll be a huge jump in production for Jimmy Garoppolo in 2019. If that knee stays sound and everything is looking really good around that knee right now. Zach, that was a fine question. He wants to throw a second one in here, so I'm going to let it go. He says, is it crazy to assume that maybe Jalen Hurd was brought in to be the replacement and eventual true OW that Juice was supposed to be while also offloading that steep contract? Yes and no. I think OW, yes, but I think his the way that he will be used as a weapon on offense would be different than Juszczyk, because Juszczyk can be just your straight up fullback, but he can do more. So he's a fullback plus. For Jalen Hurd, I think he would be the stuff that Juice did as a plus. I think he would be that mostly, and maybe a partial fullback. So I think you could line Hurd up as a fullback, but you don't want Jalen Hurd. I mean, look at his legs and look how he's built. I don't think he would hold up, and I don't think he would want to do it, first of all, but I don't think you would want him lining up as a true fullback and taking on guys and being a battering ram. I just don't think that's a good fit, but I think all the other things that Juszczyk does and moving around and maybe being an H-back and being a player that if they treat him like a wide receiver, he can block you. I think that sort of a situation, or be more, I think it's more likely that he's more of a tailback than a fullback, in fact, the way he'll be used in the offense. But he could line up and do some things as a fullback. And maybe if Hurd is to replace Juice as the OW in Shanahan's offense, what I would imagine is that Shanahan has decided that he's going to spread things out a little bit more and just not use a true fullback as much. So in that case, it would be more of having an H-back on the field, more of having another receiver on the field and spreading it out a little bit more rather than having a fullback and having that 21 personnel as often as Kyle Shanahan has. 49ers Camelot wants to know, who decides the depth chart and starters, the coordinator or position coach? I think it's a group effort, and I think every team is probably different. I know, you know, Kyle Shanahan's an offensive coach, so he's got everything on offense decided. He knows how he wants to use guys. He knows what that depth chart should be, and I'm sure he takes a lot of input from the position coaches. But on the defensive side of the ball, if Shanahan wants a certain thing done, then that's the way it is. If he says, you know what, I want Solomon Thomas to be the starter at defensive tackle, then Solomon Thomas is going to be the starter, and that's the way it is. But otherwise, the defensive coordinator would have the say, and I think they would lean on the position coaches. And I think it's a group thing, and they bring it all together. And in the end, it's all falls under the head coach. So head coach is in charge. If he wants it done a certain way, then that's the way it's going to be done. Otherwise, it's the coordinators who are going to lean on their position coaches probably for some advice. And then I think the special teams coordinator is pretty much in control of all the special teams. But again, head coach has a lot of say there. And if he's like, well, I want Dante Pettis to return punts, then Dante Pettis is returning punts. Now, during the games, I think it's just too hectic for a head coach, and the position coaches are on top of it, and they know what the depth chart is, and they're doing the subs, and they're making sure the right guy's going in for the right guy. And if they think someone's tired, they're going to move in the other guy for them. So I think sometimes the head coach might not even have the exact idea of who's on the field when he's calling a play. He thinks it's a certain grouping, and maybe the backup's in, and he doesn't realize it until they're out there and they're getting ready to snap it because he's in his own head calling the play while all the substitutions are going on. So I might have set a precedent with the overrated question. Got some negativity here. Jeremy asks, who is going to be the young, promising future superstar 49er with ultra-high expectations this year and then totally flops or retires or gets arrested? Example, Colbert, Johnson, Robinson, Witherspoon, Borland, Anthony Davis, Foster, Alden Smith. I guess it's not completely unforeseen if you foresee it and guess who that player would be. I mean, the one that would wreck the 49ers would be Nick Bosa if somehow he has injury problems that nag him throughout his career and he's never able to be the guy and hit that upside that he's supposed to be as a stud defensive end for the 49ers. So the one that could really hurt him, I think, would be that. And that would be, I mean, if you miss on a number two overall pick after Solomon Thomas has had a rough career as a number three overall pick, be a tough one to overcome. And you could, as long as your coach and your quarterback and everything else is clicking and you're hitting on some later picks like the 49ers did with George Kittle in 2017 to kind of make up for that. Guessing who, I mean, it's like, yeah, I don't know. And I don't expect it to be Nick Bosa. But as far as which one would hurt the most, definitely would be him. Hey, Drood on Twitter, which positions, apart from quarterback, face the greatest learning curve towards learning the Shanahan playbook? That would absolutely be, I think it's probably not too different between Shanahan's playbook and other teams' playbook, which positions are the most difficult to learn. And I just think it's just maybe multiplied in Shanahan's offense just because of how wordy it is and how much movement and play action and motion and things you have to learn in that offense. But I would say tight end and wide receiver are the ones. Those are the most difficult just because there's so much you have to learn. You're moving around a lot. With tight ends, it's always tough. Like, rookie tight ends rarely do really big things in the NFL, and it's just because not only do you have to learn basically a wide receiver position, you have to learn all the blocking assignments as well. So you have to learn almost two positions in one. So it can become really tough for you, especially if it's a complex offense where you're asked to do a lot in the passing game and you're not just, you know, an extra offensive lineman as an inline blocker. And wide receivers just around the league, it's always a tough position to learn. And you not only have to learn your position and do it well, but you've got to be in the right place in your routes specifically for the quarterback who's throwing you the ball. So you have to be in sync with the quarterback as well. So it all works together. It can just be really difficult. And even more so in Kyle Shanahan's offense, he really wants things run very specifically and very particular. There's a story when he first took over the job talking about Pierre Garçon and talking about their days in Washington. And Pierre Garçon was already a veteran wide receiver. And Kyle Shanahan was on the sidelines like, look, I want to call this play, but Pierre, are you going to run this route right? Are you going to run it like the way I want? Or are you going to run it like the way you do it? And so that was a veteran player that still wasn't doing things exactly how he wanted to for a specific play. And I think about last year, I think it was Kendrick Bourne who was running sort of a hook route on the right side of the formation. He's supposed to turn in. He turns out that's the difference in a pick six or not. And I want to finish this podcast off with Alvin. Shout out to Alvin and his son. He says, your podcast is so great. My kid had me put on a different podcast the other day, and he asked me to shut it off and put yours back on. I'm not going to specify what podcast he turned it to, but he asked me to shut it off, put yours back on before the 10-minute mark of the other podcast. So shout out to Alvin and his son. Thank you very much for the kind words. And thank you so much for everybody who was sending in mailbag questions. Apologies if I didn't get to your question, but I will hit some more on Wednesday with Nick. So talk to you guys next time right here on Locked On 49ers.